What is up, Wizards fans? Welcome to another Believe in Wizards podcast. I'm Matt Moderno. Our most recent episode before this one was the introduction of Will Dawkins and talking to Rylan Styles of Locked On Thunder, you know, just about what that move meant. We want to do something similar for Travis Schlenk and figured the person best to do that was somebody who covered the Hawks intimately. I've got Kevin Chouinard coming on of Hawks.com. He was on previously to talk about a rumored trade at the time for John Collins. Gives really great insight. So this one's a little overdue from the Schlenk hiring, you know, a week ago, but we wanted to get somebody that could really talk to Schlenk's track record, and Kevin can do a great job of that. We're brought to you by Stateside Vodka, their hard iced teas, hard lemonades, all that great stuff, as the Surfside line of products are delicious. Also brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline is your number one source for all your championship finals info, stats, news, and scores. Get the latest odds and lines and latest matchup info reports for this year's NBA and Stanley Cup finals. BetOnline is your sports intel headquarters this season, as we have you covered for all your sports wagering needs from NBA, NHL, MLB, UFC, boxing, all that good stuff. It's the fastest, easiest way to get your betting info, including live betting options and your favorite casino and card games available right from your home. Get in on the action today. Head on to the website and use our promo code BELIEVE, BLEAV, to receive your 50% off welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts. Okay, cool. With that, let's get to my conversation with Kevin Chouinard of Hawks.com. All right, I'm pleased to bring on Kevin Chouinard of Hawks.com. Kevin, thanks so much for coming back on.
Thanks for having me on.
Travis Schlenk, the last time we talked, you know, there was a potential, could the Wizards go out and get somebody like John Collins that ultimately didn't materialize? But John Collins was somebody that Schlenk drafted, I think one of the better, you know, picks on his resume. But I guess, first of all, Wizards fans, I think, are excited with these moves we're making from a front office perspective. And Schlenk is the only one we have not discussed on this podcast yet. So I guess just overall, what was your opinion of Schlenk's time in Atlanta? And is this a move that the Wizards fans should be happy with?
Yeah, I think they should be very happy about it. I think at one point when Golden State was still alive in the playoffs, there were murmurs that Bob Myers might end up in Washington at some point. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking to myself at that point, it's like, well, you know, you go back and look at who really sort of put the cornerstones of that dynasty together, and they sort of preceded Myers.
Yeah, sure.
It was Larry Riley and Travis and Bob Myers came along later, and it's like, you know, if you really want to get, you know, some of the Thunder, you kind of dig a little deeper in the roots there, and lo and behold, they took them a while to get there, but they did. So Travis is a sharp, keen basketball mind, and I think he's going to do a great job. You would know better than me, but has the draft been a recent strength of the Wizards over the past decade or so? I'm guessing no, but I'll defer.
You would be guessing correctly. Whereas I like the team that Schlenk mostly put together. I think it at least reflects a modern basketball team for the most part. And that's not something I think we've been able to say here in Washington for the better part of the last, I don't know, two decades, realistically.
Yeah, he's, I think maybe the overarching theme, for better or worse, is that, you know, Travis was sort of a GM who almost operated like a scout. Like that was his thing. Like, I'm pretty sure he was on the record a few times, you know, saying that he liked to be in the gym. He was on the road a lot, and he wanted to make a point of, it wasn't just the games that he was watching. He was watching, you know, body language. He said he wanted to see how players reacted to how they were coached and how they reacted to their teammates in the huddle. And, you know, what did they do when they were on the bench? How did they react to their teammates' success and things like that? So he liked to be in the gym. He was on the road an awful lot. When he was in town, he would be at games. He would be in State Farm Arena at 5 o'clock, sitting 15 rows up, just sort of watching players from the visiting team warm up, you know, the 10 through 15 guys, you know, just kind of checking out what was there and getting the lay of the land and watching those players. So
I like that.
He's just a person. He's sort of one of those observant people who just likes to watch and figure it out. And I think that gives him a good eye for talent, and that's sort of his starting point.
it seems to track with his sort of resume here overall, and he'll be joining the Wizards as the VP of player personnel. And it sounds like from that, you know, player personnel is something that he's really kind of made his calling card. And his first job was the video coordinator for the Miami Heat from 1999 to 2003. And I think that's obviously worked out pretty well for a couple other people who have been in that Heat video coordinator position. He moved to be an assistant coach for the Warriors from 05 to 2010 before transitioning to be director of player personnel for them from 2010 to 2012. So you mentioned, you know, the drafts where they added Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, obviously important there. And then that next year in 2012 was obviously the year that they drafted Draymond Green. And he's reportedly, you know, one of the brainchilds behind adding Draymond, which looks pretty good in retrospect, was the assistant GM to Bob Myers in Golden State from 2012 to 2017. And then the head of basketball ops for the Atlanta Hawks from 2017 to 2012. I think even just looking at the Warriors side of it, you know, it makes sense. This is a guy that was an assistant coach for some amount of time and probably is interested in things like body language and how guys actually get along and fit together. It's not just, you know, fantasy GM where piece, you know, people are puzzle pieces and stuff like that. He probably had to, you know, pay attention to how these guys' interpersonal dynamics work and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, to a couple of points to backtrack a little bit. It was funny that you started today with John Collins because it seemed like the Hawks social team started with their draft coverage today. And one of the things they led with is that, you know, John Collins was a pick at 19. And that was Schlenk's first draft. I want to say it was 2-3 weeks after he was hired. He didn't have a whole long time after taking the job before hitting that first draft. And that was his first pick.
Not a bad place to start.
wasn't a bad place to start. Yeah, it was. That was a pretty successful one. But he, you know, he said that he got into the front office role because, you know, I forget who it was. I think it might have been Larry Riley. I think Larry Riley kind of plucked him and pulled him aside and said, you know, here's where the job stability is. If you want to have a family and if you want to sort of, you know, I wouldn't say get off the road because once he got into upper management, he was very much on the road. But, you know, that was sort of a life choice that he made. And it seems like it paid off for him.
Yeah, definitely. I think it'll be really interesting to see how this particular role materializes and how he complements somebody like Michael Winger coming over from the Clippers, who's supposedly more of a salary cap trade kind of guy. Hopefully Schlenk can be more of the personnel kind of guy and fitting all these things together. And then we now have Will Dawkins from Oklahoma City coming in as the GM, also been more of a scouting personnel type guy. So hopefully these guys have complementary skill sets. But I do think it helps that Schlenk's been in a couple different roles and maybe can empathize more with, you know, the coaching perspective and things like that as well. And then obviously, I think just anybody that starts out in the video room, you have to be really good at watching tape and breaking down tape and things like that and making points via tape. So hopefully, you know, that's kind of helped his, you know, talent evaluation and things like that. Just looking at some of his key drafts, 2012 for the Warriors, Harrison Barnes, Festus Ezeli, who was pretty good for them for a couple of years, and Draymond Green at 35. The year before that, didn't really do much of note. And then 2015, Kevon Looney. The year before that, Damian Jones and Patrick McCall have been serviceable guys that they took, you know, with second round picks, essentially. Jones actually went 30th. And the year after that, his last year with Golden State, I believe, they took Jordan Bell, 38th, productive player for them for a while. And then you look at his Hawks draft. John Collins was the 19th pick, worked out pretty darn well. The year after that, took Kevin Huerter with the 19th pick. I'd say that worked out pretty well. But the big one, I think Wizards fans questioned, the 2018 move to trade essentially Luka Doncic for Trae Young. I think in hindsight, because of the way that trades worked out, it looks worse, you know, than it was. That was his guy he wanted, and he added in this, you know, additional asset to do so, and DeAndre Hunter, that worked out pretty well here too. I guess
that extra pick was Cam Reddish.
Oh, you're right. Sorry, the
Hunter,
ninth pick.
Hunter was a separate deal.
That's right. I got you.
Yeah, and so yeah, I think there's, or 10th I think pick. There's some noise in some of it. I think when you sort of look at his track record, I think like Golden State, obviously, I think there's some noise in that. You know, whether good or bad, it's hard to separate, you know, what did he believe in versus what did the other Warriors voices in the room want. Mm-hmm. And I think with the Luka thing, you know, I guess, first of all, I don't necessarily view that as a massive loss, separate from the extra pick. Sure. I don't know. Like, I feel like they've had really comparable NBA careers to this point. But, you know, beyond that, though, I do think that there's some noise in that move as well, because I think, you know, when you start talking about picks 1, 2, 3 in a draft, you get more input from ownership and business side, and all sorts of things go into that. And we also don't know, like, how much Luka and Luka's representation tried to manipulate that, saying, you know, here's where I want to go. He had some leverage in that when he was MVP in that season with Real Madrid, and he didn't have to come over. So I think they, you know, more than your average college prospect or otherwise, you know, being in a stable situation overseas, he could definitely, you know, take an NBA situation that he didn't like and say, you know, hey, I'm not coming, which, you know, I think you factor in a little bit of that with Sacramento too. But I think, you know, in that particular case, I don't know that was necessarily an all Travis move. I do think there were business side and representation side issues there, just separate from, you know, who do I think the best player to pick here is.
That's a really great point. And I think that's something that we as fans don't have, a lot of insight into. And we can look at this with hindsight. And let's say, even if you view Doncic as the, you know, vastly superior player, it's still, what did people view them as at the time? And there's still a reason that two teams, you know, skipped over Doncic. Those are those other factors that you mentioned, but this probably
I don't know
works.
What Phoenix was thinking.
Yeah, they have less of an excuse.
I do think that for Sacramento, I don't think that the Kings had a whole bunch of medical information. He obviously didn't work out for them. I think he made it quite clear that he didn't want to go to Sacramento, and then he might have done something very similar for Atlanta as well. Mm-hmm. I know that Trey Young's father has said a couple of times, someday that story will come out about how draft night went down, and there's so much that we don't know. So I wonder what those variables are. He hasn't really elaborated on them, sure. But be curious to know at some point.
That's a 30 for 30 I would love to watch personally. So maybe we can hold out hope for that down the road there. You know, that move looks way worse if you're Travis Schlenk and you do all that and you end up with Marvin Bagley or something and a pick as opposed to Trae Young. But I think, you know, he's had playoff success with Young. It's not like this team has been, totally terrible or anything like that. I think the Wizards would happily trade the last 5 years under Schlenk for the last 5 years in Washington. I think anytime you can make multiple, you know, second round and beyond playoff appearances over a 5 year stretch, that's more than we have to hang our hats on in the last 35 years here, realistically. So I would be cool with that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, Trey gets, I think when you look at Trey versus Luka, I think the thing that sort of maybe gets understated a little bit is that, you know, they've made the playoffs 3 years running now, and I feel like they've showed themselves very well in two of them. Last year they got absolutely drubbed by the Heat. They were kind of dinged up and Miami was just a vastly better team. But, you know, they had a conference finals run 2 years ago, and this year they beat the Heat in the play-in game and had the Celtics, you know, up to the last 2 minutes of game six. They were right there with Boston. So, I think they've had a reasonable amount of success, sort of comparable to the level of success that Dallas has had since that draft. But, you know, if we want to get into negatives for Schlenk, you know, what do you look at when you say, well, he didn't really do well in these aspects? And one is, I think, you know, going back to the Trey Luka trade, the extra pick that they got was Cam Reddish. And Cam Reddish is a sort of a tantalizing prospect, you know, a wing with a 7'1" wingspan and, you know, an absolutely fantastic jump shot. But you look at everything else around him, you know, just sort of how does he fit with a basketball team skill wise, you know, in terms of, can he play on the ball? Can he play off the ball? What does it look like? Can he play team defense separate from having sort of decent one-on-one basketball defensive skills? Like, and I think, you know, I think Travis whiffed on that pick. That was a big whiff at number 10 with the extra pick that he got. in that draft. And for all that I said earlier about, you know, what do you see when you get to the gym early and watch a game from the stands and you can see the sidelines and the huddles and the pregames and all of that, like, did you do that for Cam Reddish?
Because, yeah, that doesn't,
you know,
seem to
attract. I did that for when he was here with the Hawks and, you know, didn't get the greatest impression of how things were going from that. So
sure. I think that's another one for Wizards fans. In hindsight, I would encourage them to remember that there was a very vocal, I would say, honestly, majority of Wizards fans that wanted Cam Reddish with the 9th pick, you know, and we ended up with Rui Hachimura. And mm-hmm. a lot of people questioned that at the time. And I'd say
look at it now.
Yeah, he's had the better career of the two, but it's hard to ding, you know, Schlenk for that based on how it's worked out when that was a person that a lot of people here wanted. And you have to wonder if maybe taking Hunter, who was a relatively safer guy a few picks earlier, made him feel like he could take a bigger swing with somebody like Reddish. So it's always good to look at those things kind of collectively, I think, about how one move kind of informs the other too. So at the end of the day, there's still two longer guys that theoretically, if they all work out, you know, fit in with sort of the modern mold of switchable wings and things like that. And I think it fits into at least a vision that he tried to execute. And there may be some hits and misses along the way, but at least it looked like someone with a plan to us from an outsider perspective. That's something that Wizards fans have questioned a lot under previous GM Tommy Shepard. Like, what were they actually trying to build toward? Whereas with Schlenk, I think you can look at his picks and say, like, oh, okay, this is what they're working toward. Is that fair from a kind of, you know, outsider perspective?
Yeah. And I guess if you want to look at some of the other dings against Schlenk over the years, in the same draft where they ended up with Trey after, you know, drafting Luka and making that trade, mm-hmm. they picked Amari Spellman at 30.
30, yeah.
And, you know, 30s are often hit and miss. But I think if you look at the entirety of that draft, what stands out is that there was a fair amount of talent from 31 to 40 after Spellman. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, we're like 5 years removed from this, and it still feels like it hurts. But what they didn't get, and I understand why they didn't, but what they missed out on was a lot of good defensive sort of on-ball guards, point guards, mm-hmm. I think was primarily what they missed with that Spellman pick. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it ever went on the record. Maybe it was just sort of a line of thought at the time, but I think what he really did not want to do was just have a bunch of rookie guards. Like, he knew Trey was going to come in. Trey was going to get the reins. He was going to be the starting point guard, and he wanted to have a veteran. And so eventually they made the move and got Jeremy Lin. And Jeremy Lin was fine for that season. And I, you know, if you just look at, you know, what did he do for Trey and how did that work? And did Trey figure stuff out from his other point guard that he had around? And I think the answer is yes. So I think that worked. And I think the end result is really what you have in Trey. But it did feel like that was a whiff of a pick, especially like I feel like they picked for need. Mm-hmm. And maybe, you know, if they could just figure out a way to maybe bring in another guard as a third guard or something, you know, that might have worked out better for them. I think, you know, the other thing that you want to talk about, maybe if you want to look at, you know, how do you ding what Schlenk controlled in his time here? Because I overall in his draft stuff, you know, AJ Griffin, Jalen Johnson, and Yeka Kong were like, these are all great picks. He made
would love any of them in a Wizards uniform. So I'm all with you there.
Yeah. And you know, he made the big deal for DeAndre Hunter as well. And you know, I feel like, you know, they packaged a lot of things. They gave up a lot of value in that move for Hunter. And so you know, there were a lot, it was like a three picks, and they also took on like a big chunk of Solomon Hill's salary for a year. And mm-hmm. so there were a lot of things in that deal for Hunter. But, you know, all told, I know a lot of people wouldn't say this and would not be as rosy about it as I am, but, you know, it's hard to get that kind of player. And so you have to give up a lot. And I still feel like they gave up sort of four nickels for a quarter or something. You look at the picks mm-hmm. that New Orleans went and made with those picks, and it's like, would you really want any of that? I feel like they gave a bunch of small things to get a big one. And then, but it does at the same time sort of illustrate, I think, the fairest critique of Schlenk, which is And maybe you do want to pair him with somebody like Winger, who's sort of looking at value and managing the cap and trying to squeeze every ounce of things out, because that really wasn't sort of Schlenk's MO. I think he sort of visualized it as a long-term project and wanted to, you know, get in good with agents and wanted to sort of build personal relations. And he valued that more than just necessarily sort of slash and burn, optimize everything. He sort of wanted to personalize it and have good relationships and, you know, make sure players were happy and try to more establish a culture, as opposed to just be sort of, okay, here's what the balance sheet is. We've got to make sure we got this, this, and this, and that we extract all the possible value out of this trade. And so there were things like Collins's contract, which, you know, they're still sort of wrangling with right now, where it's like Collins is a good player. He's also got a very large contract. And, you know, was there anybody else bidding up that contract? Probably not to the extent that the Hawks paid. So, you know, that kind of stuff is where, you know, maybe, you know, you can ding his tenure a little bit.
Even just, we talked about this the last time you were on, it just always seems weird that, like, the last few years, it seems like Collins has just been perpetually on the trade block, whether how much of that is realistic between actual front offices or Schlenk wanting to actually move him, or just conjecture, you know, given his fit and contract and things like that. But the Hunter contract is pretty big relative to production and health and things like that so far. And Collins similarly maybe was a little steep at the time, and given his health the last year and a half also maybe doesn't look as good in retrospect. So it's interesting. Like, I like looking at this full picture like this with a few years of hindsight of he went out and got guys that he wanted. Maybe the contracts haven't worked out, or second contracts for those guys haven't worked out as well as you would have liked. And to your point, it'd be really interesting to see how those moves maybe look with somebody like a Michael Winger kind of helping him balance those things from a bigger picture. But Schlenk is interesting to me of the three front office hires for the Wizards, because you can evaluate his moves as his moves, I think. Whereas Winger is under Lawrence Frank, you don't really know how much of those were his. Previous to that, he was with Sam Presti. Similarly with Will Dawkins, they're a part of larger front offices, but at least Schlenk's, you can say these were his moves relatively, you know, obviously you don't know what the owner's putting in, but he was at least kind of driving the bus for a lot of these things. And I think the one takeaway from all three of the front offices that these guys come from, they weren't afraid to go out and get guys that they wanted and expend resources and assets and capital to go out and just, hey, this is the guy we want. Let's find a way to make it happen. And that's also not something the Wizards have been particularly successful at the last couple of years. We hear the Wizards wanted DeJounte Murray. He ultimately ends up in Atlanta. They wanted Donovan Mitchell. He ultimately ends up in Cleveland. So maybe these guys will be more successful as a collective of going out, and the people they had, you know, identified, they actually make it happen. So, you know, even if they haven't totally worked out for Schlenk, I still like the proactiveness, I guess, more than the things we've seen here.
Yeah, that's an interesting way to look at it.
I don't know. We'll see. I'm trying to look at, like, how all these guys will fit. And I think just the first thing for Schlenk, like, they won less than 30 games his first three seasons there. But in that fourth year, it seems like they really took a jump forward. They went 41-31, and that's the year they made the Eastern Conference Finals. And obviously, they've been in the playoffs the last couple seasons after that. I guess overall, to me, it felt like, again, from afar, that he kind of got a raw deal for somehow this stuff worked out, and maybe there's some baggage with the coaching and things like that. Overall, I guess, how do you view Schlenk's tenure in Atlanta? More good than bad? Is that fair?
Yeah, absolutely. I would definitely say more good than bad. Like, the losing at the beginning was by design. Like, right. It was time to blow it up, and they blew it up, and, you know, they were gunning for a high draft pick in that 2018 draft, and they got it. You know, that that first season, there was, you know, some rancor. Just I think because he came in, and you know, unlike a lot of situations, he didn't install a head coach right away. So there was 1 year of overlap with Mike Budenholzer and Travis Schlenk. And, you know, Bud had that kind of control over player personnel before Schlenk was brought in. So he went from being sort of head coach / executive to just head coach.
Right.
And then it was also head coach in a season where they weren't really trying to win.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was hard.
Sure.
And by the end, I think Bud had kind of had it. Like that wasn't his thing to go about it that way. And he kind of knew the writing was on the wall. And I think everybody was sort of ready to move on after that.
That's interesting. Here in Washington, we've made the commitment to bring Wes Unseld Jr. back for at least next season. So it's another year where you've got a brand new front office from head to toe with a coach that was left over from the previous regime. I wonder what that signals for somebody like Wes longer term too. At least they're going to maybe give him a shake or see how it works for a year and then kind of decide from there. Wes didn't have the same input, I don't think, on the roster that it sounds like Budenholzer did, but
right.
Still different, right? To be under a new boss and see how that works and personalities gel and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's that's a eerie parallel.
We've got an owner here in Washington that sort of famously, banged his fist on the table and said, "We will never ever tank." And you look at someone like Schlenk that seemed okay to maybe not necessarily tank, but there was an intentional choice to rebuild there, right? And reset things. And I wonder what that signals for Washington, given the state of its roster and things like that, if that makes it more or less likely, given that Schlenk kind of relatively quickly rebuilt a team. I don't honestly think 3 years is all that long to say we bottomed out and then we made an Eastern Conference Finals. I think if you offered Wizards fans 3 years of being under 30 wins to guarantee, even a second round playoff trip in that fourth or fifth year, I think we would all kind of sign up for that. So I'm interested to see what that actually means for us, given, that he's had some success doing things that way already.
Yeah. We sort of look at the draft and contract extensions. Maybe, one of his best moves, like the point I made, but just to reiterate the point from before, like it's hard to say that anything he did in Golden State was his and has his stamp on it. And like you said, with Winger, it's hard to separate what he thought versus, what other people in that front office thought. But Travis did sort of have solo control, it feels like to me, for everything, maybe except for that, trade.
Mm-hmm.
So you make a trade, the objective now is make a team around Trey. And maybe, I feel like Hunter was a big part of that. And I know he doesn't have gaudy stats and, he's been hurt. I still think he's kind of the right player. You need sort of that big sort of defensive minded forward. And that's worked well. But, maybe the single piece that was just sort of illustrates how Schlenk was sort of capable of putting together the right personnel to fit with other personnel. I think that Capella trade, didn't have to give up a lot there. He kind of knew that Houston was in the sort of the selling situation. I didn't have to get a whole lot, give up a whole lot. Sort of patiently waited out the second half of an injury riddled year for Capella.
Mm-hmm.
But that was like, okay, what do I need to make this trade work? My dog is rolling around on her back right next to my microphone. Thanks, bud.
My cat is doing the exact same thing at the moment. So I think we're in good company here.
But like you need a rim protector. You need somebody who's going to sort of cover up defensive mistakes and you need somebody who is a role man.
Mm-hmm.
And, even more than being a role man, he's like an elite screener. Like, we've watched sort of Bam in this playoff run and the finals appearance. And it's like, man, he's a good screener. And a lot of what Trey has done successfully on offense just starts with Capella screening somebody and getting the mismatch and, making it a really good screen. You had Gortat.
Yeah.
I hesitate to speak of the number of times I've gotten in trouble with the league, but one time I did a thread of like 15 Gortat moving screens in the league. Somebody in the league is like, hey, a writer for Hucks.com can't be getting money from an NBA team and putting this kind of video series out there. So yeah, you know, but screens matter, and Capella was great at it, and it was the kind of thing that Trey needed. And so you could just kind of see that, okay, he understands personnel enough to kind of make this picture work.
It's interesting you mentioned the Gortat screen, because he came in part-time this year as an assistant coach to work with Daniel Gafford on setting screens. And for the first time in Gafford's career, he got called for a lot of moving screens. So maybe your article finally got the league to crack down on this a little bit. Just sticking with that Capella trade, they basically sent out Evan Turner, who by all accounts had kind of, that had run its course in Atlanta, a Brooklyn lottery protected first round pick, and a 2026 second round pick from Golden State for Capella and Nene. That's, I think, a move people would happily make, you know, over and over again in retrospect, given how, you know, Capella's fit in for them. And just all of that points to, we have Trae Young, and I think he built a team around Trae to maximize Trae's strengths and cover up his deficiencies. As well, you know, at least the vision makes sense for how you do that. Now, some of these picks didn't work out as well as others. You've got Capella, who's sort of the perfect lob threat for somebody like Trae, who throws that really good, you know, sort of that lob off the pick and roll. And then you've got Okongwu, who's theoretically at least a very switchable big and kind of fits the modern NBA. And thoughts, you know, were that he'd turn into the next Bam Adebayo kind of guy. And you've got Reddish and Hunter, you kind of picture as these switchable wings, and Collins, this is pogo stick athletic four who can maybe guard multiple positions. And, you know, Jalen Johnson, a similar kind of archetype to that, of just big switchable guys with multiple skills. And I really kind of value the mindset here, because that's at least trying to maximize your, you know, let's say your best player's profile. And if you're Washington and you're part of the pro Bradley Beal crowd, and he's going to be here longer term, Schlenk at least seems well positioned to be the guy to try to like maximize Beal and find complementary pieces for him, at least, you know, theoretically.
Yeah. I mean, at the same time though, like, you have to wonder how he feels about Beal. Like, is it, I don't know. Like, because, you know, what was here when he started in Atlanta was quickly gone.
Sure.
So, I mean, If his choice is, okay, how do we make it work? I'd be interested to see what he thinks and, you know, how he feels about that.
We've at least heard it reported that Ted Leonsis maybe at least is finally willing to move on from Beal. And I think most of us would still kind of hope that that's the case at this point. And Schlenk and Winger and these guys' background probably points to that at least being on the table. I think just if you are going to stick with Beal and ride it out, though, he's probably better suited than most to put the right pieces around him to make him successful. Just a couple other moves we got here. The Hawks sent Torian Green and a 2021 second round pick to the Nets for Allen Crabb and Brooklyn's 2019 draft pick, first round pick, which was 17th overall, and 2020 lottery protected first round picks, which is also impressive. They sent out Dennis Schroeder and Mike Muscala for Justin Anderson, Carmelo Anthony, and the Thunder's 2022 lottery protected first round pick. And just that's on top of the draft record. I think, you know, there's probably some bad moves in there too that you would know better than I would. But I think for the most part, it's at least like, we've talked mostly about the draft stuff, but some of the trades here are pretty savvy, I think, too. And they were about capitalizing on resources and giving himself a lot of swings at the bat to make some of those draft mistakes. So that's another encouraging thing for Wizards fans who have been, you know, asset depleted for most of the last, I don't know, 5 or 6 years at the, you know, bare minimum.
Yeah, that was definitely the MO for the first couple of seasons, was just, okay, how do we get picks? How do we get better picks? How do we get more picks? And they were, you know, pretty much willing to sell whatever they had, knowing that it was going to be a couple of years and it was going to be a rebuild.
So yeah, if Washington does that move that way, this is probably another guy that's going to be helpful in that. How do we capitalize on the people that are here, you know, as we turn them into longer term assets? Who knows how much interaction we'll have with him from a media perspective in this new role, since a lot of times you hear just directly from the GM and things like that, and whose new role, it's not really a precedent in the Wizards organization for what that
and I don't think he particularly relished it.
Okay. That was going to be
like
my question.
He was always really courteous, and sure, he's a sweet, kind man, and did his job, you know, in terms of, you know, communicating with the media well, I just don't think he particularly liked it.
Interesting. So that's always really something I'm curious about, just from, you know, what are you going to get from these guys, or how much can you take it, you know, at face value, what they say? And some front office types seem to relish that opportunity to speak to the media and do interviews and things like that more than others. And I was going to say, I don't remember a whole lot of hearing Travis Schlenk on the Woj pod or with Zach Lowe or those kinds of things. It seemed like maybe he kept a lower profile than some of his peers did over the last couple of years.
I think that's a fair assessment. I think he tried to do some, but yeah, I don't think it was his favorite.
So maybe in this new role, that's something he can kind of get away with. It'll either be Will Dawkins or Winger around him. That'll be interesting to see. Anything we haven't covered Schlenk related that you think is worthwhile for Wizards fans to be aware of over the, you know, coming months?
I don't think so. I guess, you know, the one thing that we didn't hit on was just sort of what was the reason for, you know, the end of his tenure in Atlanta. Mm. I think part of it was just a disagreement on, you know, they have the Hawks owner is Tony Ressler. His son is in the front office. And I think there was just some disagreement of how that role would go down and how much say he would have. And so I just think that was, you know, sort of a big factor. I don't think it was on the record, but, you know, I just think there was, you know, if that wasn't the factor, that was at least the canary in the coal mine that, sure, you know, he didn't have maybe the long-term mandate or as much control and backing from the ownership as he wanted.
Was he already moved on by the time the DeJounte Murray move went down, or was he still around for or part of that decision?
Yeah, he was around, and, you know, I think reportedly that wasn't his trade. I don't think that was a move that he was on board with.
Okay.
I don't, you know, again, it's hard to sort of negotiate the varying levels. Like, did he just not want DeJounte Murray, period? But I think the larger sticking point maybe was just that he didn't want DeJounte Murray at that price, which was, you know, like three unprotected picks for unprotected first round picks. Reportedly that trade was set up by other people in the front office who eventually are now the people that are in control. And that move, like, I think the verdict is still out. Like, I don't think it was a massive success or a massive failure, but, like, you could kind of see it working. You know, we mentioned on the outset, like, I feel like Trey's had a good career and had the right kind of team around him. But in talking about those three consecutive playoff appearances, you know, last year was the disappointing one. Miami just came in and spanked them. And what they did was they just made Trey the focal point. They said, we are not letting you do squat. And so I think, you know, from that series, it was pretty apparent that they needed another ball handler, because it was, you know, one guy on Trey, one really good defender on Trey, and then people just shading towards him, just taking away the gaps. You know, they weren't so much guarding the wing players as they were standing between the wing players and Trey and making sure that those lanes weren't going to be there. And so they really needed somebody who could operate a play off the weak side. Like, if Trey needed to get off the ball, you know, they needed to get somebody on the other side who could, you know, function with the ball in their hands and get to the rim if needed. They didn't really have that. And you know, they were more successful against Miami in those games, in those situations this season, when the Heat tried it again. And even in the play-in game, it kind of went down that way, that they had that second side playmaker. And, you know, it may be that Trey needs that. You know, it's kind of a split. Like, how much shooting do you need versus how much sort of second side playmaking do you need? They've given up some shooting over the last couple of years, and that felt like it will move away from Schlenk. But you can kind of see that, okay, well, they did kind of need it. Like, Miami's a clever team, right? We've seen them do so many interesting things on offense and defense since, you know, the bubble to now. And maybe not all teams were exploiting the Schlenk teams that way, but Miami was. And it's different, you know, year to year. Like last year, they were really hurt in that playoff series. This year, they were a lot healthier going into the postseason. But I'm not sure that Schlenk valued the playmaking as much as maybe some of the other aspects. And in that trade for DeJounte, they were getting a little bit more playmaking to put next to Trey. And it's an interesting experiment, and the jury's still sort of out.
Yeah, at the expense of shooting, and you've got a guy that came from that Warriors team where shooting, you know, was at a premium. It probably was just a cultural difference between the two of them, you know, like on how to build a team and the right way to win, yeah. I guess, as a modern basketball team. Although the AJ Griffin pick, I think, added some shooting and potentially some at least offensive athleticism. Was that still a Schlenk pick?
It feels like it. Like, it's funny that, one of the things that I feel like Travis valued over the years, and it's, again, it was only, 5 years or whatever.
Sure.
But I feel like he even came out and said it, at least with respect to various players, but he was always sort of looking at looking for value, but like if there was a player who is sort of McDonald's All-American and projected to be like the third best player in his class coming out of high school, if they had a disappointing season in college, if it was just like one season, like he didn't, yep. It always seems like sort of like he valued that high school pedigree. Like if he believed in a player coming out of high school, what they did in college wasn't as important to him. And I feel like AJ sort of fit that a little bit, like that season Duke. I know he shot incredibly well from three, but that sort of whole Duke team just sort of maybe disappointed. And AJ was sort of higher coming out of high school than he was coming out of college. Yep. But Schlenk sort of typically overlooked that. He was more willing to look into the multiple year track record in high school than the 1 year in college for some of the one and dones.
That's a great point too. And the draft previous to that with Jalen Johnson and Sharif Cooper, you could point to both of those two, same two things. Those are two five-star recruits that relatively underperformed in their lone college season. So I think that's fair. And that's also been a staple of sort of the Golden State model that we've seen since then too. So whether that, that's something that Bob Myers got from Travis Schlenk or vice versa, you look at the Warriors' recent track record with James Wiseman and Jonathan Kuminga and Moses Moody and players like that, that's been their MO of guys that were, higher, more highly regarded coming out of high school than they were, a year removed from that. So that's a great point, and maybe something Wizards fans should be mindful of if we're talking about people like a Nick Smith Jr. or somebody that's a former five-star recruit that maybe underperformed. Maybe that's somebody we just saw come in for a workout that might be Travis Schlenk already having, kind of his fingerprints on something like that. Last thing I got for you, Kevin, how was his sort of working relationship with the various coaches that they had in his time at Atlanta? I know there was some stuff about, how some of those player coach dynamics went with Trey and things like that. But how, any sense for how Schlenk and his different coaches got along?
I don't think so. I mean, we already talked about Bud and sort of that awkward 1 year. And so then in that offseason, they picked Lloyd Pierce. He wanted sort of a young, bright guy to sort of build over multiple years, knowing that they were going to have a young team in rebuilding mode for a while. Pierce came from the 76ers, who, had gone through the same kind of thing with the process.
The player development guru by all accounts.
Yeah. And so, he was looking for that player development coach, and it feels like, with the exception of Reddish, the players developed in the McMillan year. That year that McMillan took over mid-season, McMillan was just hired the previous offseason. So he had only been there like a half a year when he came in. I don't know if, you know, if that was
a move that kind of
set up for one guy looking over his shoulder at another guy. Like, I don't know.
Sure.
Nate wasn't an assistant who had been with Lloyd the whole time. He came in, you know, late in the picture and was there. I think there was some, even, you know, when Lloyd was let go, there was some hesitancy. I don't think he wanted to take over necessarily at first. And it was weird that the Hawks had that much success as soon as Nate took over, because then it kind of forced the Hawks to give him an extension. Like, they'd been too successful not
forced your
to
hand
go
there.
With McMillan some more. And you have to wonder, well, is that a coach that Schlenk really wanted? Like, just because, not that Schlenk is bad and not that McMillan is bad, but if you look at sort of Nate's teams versus the kind of teams that Travis would put together, it doesn't seem like Nate would run the same kind of offense that Travis would have the personnel that he would pick run. Like, it just seems like a contrast in styles, basketball wise, not personality wise. And so you had to wonder if the success sort of forced his hand and he picked sort of the wrong style of coach for what he wanted.
No, it's interesting. That's the kind of insight I was looking for there. Of just like, because again, I'm wondering about the West unsold parallel of, you
know, just sort of X's and O's wise. It felt like a little bit of a weird fit. Like, I could see someone like who they have now being more of a fit for Travis than Nate was. But you know, at the same time, like the Nate move was the right move. It's funny. You look at, you know, the whole Schlenk era and it's basically, okay, well, who's been there? Like been there. And it's basically just two guys. It's just Trey Young and John Collins. And like, it's, you know, what did they have to get better at over the course of their career? They had to just sort of get tougher, like get grittier, turn into NBA veterans. Yep. And Nate was an important part of that. Sure. John Collins is especially weird just because he's gone from, like, he came out of college as sort of this all offense, no defense guy.
Yep.
And now all of a sudden he's in this role where as a power forward, he's sort of an all defense, no offense guy. It's just been a big turnaround, but you know, that just sort of feels a little bit like Nate's imprint. Like Nate did some of that, for better or for worse. Like, I feel like Collins would be a better offensive player today if he had somebody like Quinn Snyder instead of Nate McMillan in those interim years. But they got better on defense, and Trey got better on defense too, and more serious, more studious, more consistent under McMillan. And so, you know, in those aspects, even if Nate didn't feel like an X and O match for Travis, you know, I think he developed the personnel in the right kind of way too.
That's really insightful, because I think from the outside looking in, you never know how much of that stuff is just natural progression or things they got from him. So I think that's a good point too. And maybe there's something that Schlenk and these guys can see that Wes Unseld Jr. can provide to the people they're bringing in, or maybe that's another coach down the road that provides a certain, you know, aspect that they don't currently have from this coaching staff. Kevin, probably the most important question I'm going to ask you, if somebody wants to get smarter about the Hawks or get to some more coverage in general, where can they find your work?
I write for Hawks.com, and I do a podcast called ATL in 29, where we mostly look at Hawks stuff, but occasionally, like now in the playoffs, just talk about the NBA at large.
That's awesome. And I'll put your Twitter handle and things like that in the episode description. Thank you again for doing this. It's always so much more meaningful than to have somebody that looked at this team as closely as you did provide insight on what we can expect from Schlenk than us just, you know, looking at his resume from afar. So thanks for all the great insight here.
Yes, sir. Appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, everybody. You know the drill. Rate, review, subscribe, all that good stuff. We were brought to you by betonline.ag, and we will catch you next time.